Good evening, everyone. Thank you for the introductions. You know, as I was coming over here today, I realized that this is my first Yafi Scholars here since Sandy Vogel, Zichrono Levracha, passed away. And Sandy was the one who introduced me to this program. And even when I said no to her, that I could not teach, somehow again my name appeared on the list and I was sent dates that I was supposed to show up here. A very, very special woman, and we dedicate our learning in her memory in the hope that in the merit of this program, as I'm sure many other programs in this wonderful shul that she was behind, she may Yirtzeh Hashem serve as an aliyah for her neshama and in nechama for her family. So I want to share a little bit with you tonight, being that we're 2.5 weeks away from Pesach. You all look very relaxed, which is wonderful. Right? So being that we're 2.5 weeks away from Pesach, so I wanted to focus a little bit on a Pesach theme this evening and use as a springboard for our discussion a section from the Haggadah. So a word about the Haggadah. So we know, again, the Haggadah has gone through many changes throughout the years. The Rambam, Maimonides, in the Halachos of Pesach, the Halachos of Karban Pesach, is a whole section of the laws of the Paschal Lamb, records a version of the Haggadah. That Haggadah, of course, is very different than the Haggadah that we have today, because the Haggadah that we have today really has had a number of additions since the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, destruction of the second Temple, as well as in subsequent periods of history. We know this most notably because, interestingly enough, the Haggadah begins with an Aramaic section and ends with an Aramaic section. Not counting Kiddush for just a moment, but the real beginning of the Haggadah of Halach Ma'anya, this is the bread of affliction, Aramaic. Right? Last part of the Haggadah, Chagadya, right? Aramaic. So again, amazingly enough, everything in the middle, Hebrew. So we already know from the beginning that those two bookends, the Aramaic bookends, were additions later on in Jewish history. Not so much later, this is really pretty much in the aftermath of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, that's Halach Ma'anya. Chagadya added on a little bit later on in history. But the Haggadah serves more than just the story for the night of the Seder. The Haggadah is really almost like the guidebook for the Pesach experience. I often find the greatest challenge with the Haggadah is you only have 2 nights. Meaning the reality is, to do the Haggadah justice, you probably need a week of Siddurim. I'm not advocating for this. I'm just suggesting that that's how much time you would need in order to really go ahead and plumb the depths of this incredible book. But again, the Haggadah does not just teach us how to navigate the Pesach Seder. The Haggadah is really there to help lay the foundation for the entire Pesach experience. Every Yom Tov, right? Every holiday has an Avodah. There's something I'm supposed to accomplish. There's something I'm supposed to do. And in every holiday, there are really 2 aspects to this. There are the mechanistic details, and then there's the spiritual service. So the mechanistic details of Pesach are quite clear and known. Eat matzah, don't eat chametz, rid my home of chametz. It's Yom Tov also, so there are all the other mitzvos that are associated with regular Yom Tov. And again, but what's the spiritual avodah? There's an neshama, there's a heart, there's a soul that's part of Pesach as well. So what I'd like to try to explore a little bit tonight, using one of the passages of the Haggadah, is to try to understand a little bit of what it is that we're supposed to learn over this Yom Tov of Pesach. We know that Pesach celebrates our freedom. But we also know that that freedom is not an ends. That freedom is a means. That's most clearly expressed, because remember again, how long do we actually just celebrate freedom for over Pesach? How long are we solely dedicated to freedom? Really, 1 day. Because by the second day of Pesach, what are we already doing? We're already counting the Omer. And the counting of the Omer, by definition, is the countdown to Matan Torah, to Sinaitic revelation, to Kabbalah, to the reception of the Torah at Mount Sinai. So you see already this incredible dynamic that freedom itself is not an ends. Freedom is a means to something greater. So of course, yes, on a basic level, for us historically, emancipation from Egypt was in order to pave the way to allow us to get to Mount Sinai, to be able to go ahead and receive and accept the Torah. We said goodbye to a human master and accepted upon us a divine master. It's freedom in order to self-actualize. And the truth is, if you look throughout the Haggadah, and the truth is throughout Pesach itself, there are all of these little nuggets of information that teach us about what it means to be free. Because, you know, the Jewish definition of freedom is very different than, let's say, again, what you would just, I guess, assume the literal definition of freedom. Literal definition of freedom, we would assume, means what? The ability to do what you want. We, of course, know that the Judaic definition of freedom is anything but that. Remember, we're freed, but from the moment that we're freed, remember, again, what do we do the first night that we're free? We haven't even left Egypt, but we're already free. What do we do? Well, there's one obvious thing that we do, which is we eat, right? So we eat, right? There's Karban Pesach, but there are laws, there are rules. Here's, you have to prepare the Paschal lamb. You have to put the blood on the doorpost. You have to do this. You have to eat in a certain way. Your walking staff has to be in your hand. Your shoes have to be on your feet. There are rules. There are laws. There are expectations. When freedom is only a couple of hours old. Remember, again, we were just officially told to go. We're still in Egypt, but already there are rules. So we already know from the beginning that from our perspective, freedom doesn't mean the ability to do whatever you want. God gave us 613 commandments. So that definition goes by the wayside. So freedom, for our purposes, means something much deeper, something much more profound, and is somehow intertwined with our own self-actualization. So what I'd like to try to explore is one of these nuggets, one of these pieces of this, one of these aspects of freedom, through a story in the Haggadah. Let's take a look at number one. Now, I would also venture to say that when it comes to the Haggadah, all of us have our favorite part of the Haggadah. So for some, it might be because of a particular tune or a melody that's used. Others, it might be because maybe either growing up as a child, it was a part that I was involved in, or when raising my own children or something they were involved in, or maybe it's part of the storyline. So I want to share with you a number one, which to me is probably one of the most striking pieces of the Haggadah. But after we read it, you're going to say, doesn't make any, you're going to say this is probably the most uninspirational piece of the Haggadah, but you'll see why it's fascinating. Take a look at number one. I'm Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria said, Hare ani keben shivim shana. I am like 70 years old. V'lo zachisi shete amer yitzias v'tzrayim balelos. Now, what's happening over here, we're going to explore this a bit more. But Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria said, I'm like 70 years old, and literally I could not succeed in having the Exodus from Egypt mentioned every night. See, even before we go on, what Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is giving us is a window into a dramatic rabbinic debate. Is there an obligation to remember the Exodus every single day, every single night? Is there a daily obligation? Now, we know that there is a mitzvah, there is a commandment, on the biblical commandment, on the night of Pesach, on the night of the Seder, to recall the story of the Exodus, what we call Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, to tell the story. Apparently, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is telling us that there was a debate within the rabbinic community, is there a daily obligation to remember the Exodus or not? So Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria says, for years, I was trying to make the point that there is absolutely a daily obligation to remember the Exodus. But I was never successful. I was always marginalized, right? No one ever listened to my opinion. Until one day, what happened? Ad Shadarsha Ben Zoma. Until another sage by the name of Ben Zoma came along, and he made the following exposition. Shine Amar, Leman Tiskar Es Yom Tzeischa Me'eretz Mitzrayim Kol Yimechayacha. The Torah says, you shall remember the day that you left Egypt all the days of your life. Yimechayacha Hayamim, the phrase, the days of your life, refers to the obligation to remember the Exodus by day. Kol, which is an inclusive word, comes to include Halelos, ultimately comes to include the nighttime. So we'll leave off the last part of this for now. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is telling us about an interesting halachic debate. Is there an obligation to remember the Exodus daily? Apparently a dramatic dispute. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is saying yes. The rest of the rabbis apparently saying no. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, being in the minority, his opinion was not heeded until he got the backup of another, until another sage backed him up. A sage by the name of Ben Zoma, which is interesting in and of itself, that name. Why? There's something missing, right? What's his name? What's his name? So, okay, that's a different. You'll think about that over your Seder. Quite, we have a couple of rabbinic sages who are known by that name, just by their father's name and not by their own name. So, Elazar ben Azariah says, Ben Zoma came along. He saved the day. He darshened. He went ahead and he learned out from the pasuk, Leman tiskor es yom tseischa me'eretz mitzrayim kol yimechayecha. You are to remember the Exodus, the day you left Egypt, all the days of your life. And from that phrase, all the days of your life, we learn from here that there is an obligation to remember the Exodus by day and an obligation to remember the Exodus by night. Okay, very interesting passage. What's the obvious problem? I'm sorry. So first of all, it's twice a day. Good, good. What else? What's the problem from the context of the Pesach Seder?
Well, that's the minority view still.
I'm sorry?
That's still the minority view because we're all one.
Good. So first of all, just because Ben Zoma came along, why does that mean? So it's two versus the majority. One, fantastic. Good, excellent.
The Pesach Seder is at night, so night is covered.
So let me build on this a little bit more. So taking this just a bit further, excellent, which is, in the world of halacha, in the world of Jewish law, there are two distinct obligations when it comes to the Exodus. There's something called Zichiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, which means the obligation to remember the Exodus, and there is Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, the retelling of the Exodus story. Rabbi Soloveitchik, in his Pesach Shiurim, explains that there are four, possibly five fundamental distinctions between these two mitzvot. Even though they sound the same, remembering and telling the story, they're dramatically different. The most notable difference is, how do you fulfill the obligation to remember the Exodus?
Kiddush,
but on a daily basis. How do you remember it? Shema. Although, by the way, you could do a tefillin, or you could just say, I remember that God took me out of Egypt. Meaning, there doesn't have to be a particular vehicle. We happen to say it in Shema. We do this in the third paragraph of Shema, which we call the Parsha of Tzitzis. But the end of that section has a mention of the Exodus. So we say Shema in the morning, we say Shema in the evening. We remember the Exodus by day and by night. But all it requires is just a simple mentioning of the Exodus. I know that God took us out of Egypt. As opposed to Sipur, retelling of the story of the Exodus narrative, which is the mitzvah of the night of the Seder, requires me to what? To tell the story. How much of the story? The entire story. In fact, remember again, there's a dispute as to how far back you have to go with the story. Do you have to start from Avram Avinu, Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Hayu Avosinu, our ancestors were idolaters, that's a reference to Avram Avinu, right? Or do we start with Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves in Egypt? But one thing is clear, which is, Sipur requires me to go into the story in depth, from beginning until end. So this, yes?
Is this an analogy also with Shabbat, to remember and then to do? The idea of remembering.
Right, Shamar and Zachar. Although,
and then to do. And this is the same thing. It's to do when you think about people who were secular and or religious, who got involved in the civil rights movement, did it because they not only remembered, but they felt they needed to add to that.
It could very well be. It's a beautiful analogy that maybe the idea. I would say there's no question that anything for which there is a cognitive obligation is there to lay the groundwork for dynamic activity. Right? So anything that we remember, ultimately is to inform how we act. Right, correct. And that we're going to focus on that a little bit more. Obviously, the whole idea of Pesach is we celebrate freedom in order to do something with that freedom. Right? That's the goal over here. So remember, the fundamental question that everyone asks on this section is essentially, what is it doing here? What is it doing here? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is speaking about the mitzvah, the daily commandment of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, remembering the Exodus. That mitzvah, I'm not going to say it doesn't apply, it applies on the Seder night also, but it's obvious that it's covered on the Seder night, because on the Seder night we have to do even more than that. We have to do Sipur. So the fundamental question that everyone asks is, this just seems to be out of place. It just doesn't seem to really be part. It's not part of the mitzvah of the Seder. It's part of the daily obligation of remembering the Exodus. If you take a look at number two, so this is from a beautiful Sefer, a beautiful book, Tal de Yushalayim Memoadeh, written by Rav Avigdor Nevenzal. Rav Nevenzal is the Rav of the old city of Yerushalayim, and he put out a beautiful series on all the Yamim Tovim. He was a Talmud Mufak, a disciple of Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, an incredibly special man. You can meet him if you go into Yerushalayim. He davens in the Ramban's shul. This is a very approachable and sweet man, but probably one of the greatest minds of our generation. See, he quotes this idea. If you take a look at paragraph Aleph, he says, L'chora piskazu, Eina shayeches lalayla ze. He says, in reality, this section has nothing to do with the Seder. Mishum shalocha zu shetzarach lahaskir yitzias v'tzayim balelos, hu din klali hanoig b'meshech kol yemos ha-shana kulam. Because as we just said before, the idea is, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is speaking about the mitzvah of zechira, remembering the Exodus, and on Pesach night, the mitzvah is sipur, telling the story. So he gives two answers. The first is, he quotes actually a version of the Rambam. It's quite fascinating. You could see, like I said before, you could see the Rambam's version, Maimonides' version of the Haggadah, which he records in his Mishneh Torah, which interestingly enough has many glaring differences in the Haggadah we use today, but also has some very nuanced differences. One of those nuanced differences happens to be in this particular section. Because in the Rambam's Haggadah, the way it starts is, see, in our Haggadah, the section starts just as you have it over here, number one. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, in the Rambam's version of the Haggadah, the way this section starts is, Amar Lahem Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said to them, which means what? The Rambam understood that this section is a continuation of the previous section in the Haggadah. I didn't put it on your sheet, but what's the previous section of the Haggadah? Listen to this. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, v'Rabbi Yoshua, v'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, v'Rabbi Akiva, v'Rabbi Tarfon, Shayim Subin b'Bnei Brak. Tells the story of the great rabbis who are sitting and having Seder, ultimately in Bnei Brak. They're having Seder in Bnei Brak, and what happened is a famous story. They were retelling the story of the Exodus the entire night, until when? Atsha bo, Talmidei and Ba'aron, until their students came along and said to them, Rabosinu, Higia zman kriya shema shal shacharis. Good, beautiful. Right? It's time to daven.
Time. The revolt against Rome.
Oh, so amazingly enough, so now you're going to see how this comes together in an incredible way. So, the Rambam's version understands that this part that we have in number one is not at all a self-contained statement, but rather a continuation of the previous section. What's the connection between the two sections? So Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, in his commentary on the Haggadah, advances an incredibly beautiful idea. As Anne just mentioned, Rabbi Lau explains that section, we could do a whole show on that section. That section is also a very strange one. Why are all these rabbis in Bnei Brak? Right? Rabbi Akiva is the only one. Well, remember again, even if the temple is destroyed, there's only one person who lives in Bnei Brak out of this entire group, and that's Rabbi Akiva. No one else lives in Bnei Brak. Not only that, Rabbi Akiva ultimately, again, is the youngest of all of the sages. And not only that, where are their families, right? Why are all these rabbis having Seder together? Where are their families? So Rabbi Lau actually quotes an incredibly novel idea, and he explains that this episode takes place in the first year after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, whether it's the first year, or the fifth year, or the tenth year, it doesn't matter as much. He's understanding that what's happening over here is that ultimately, again, these rabbis are coming to Bnei Brak. Why are they coming to Bnei Brak? To Rabbi Akiva. Why Rabbi Akiva? Because, you know, Rabbi Akiva is known for his unending spring. He's like, his unending is the wrong word. He's almost like constant and unending stream of optimistic outlook. Rabbi Akiva is the ultimate optimist. And remember, again, we're the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So it wasn't just the idea that we lost the temple. There are 1.5 million Jews who are slaughtered when Yerushalayim falls. There's an existential threat to the continuity of the Jewish people. They come to Rabbi Akiva because they come for chizuk. They come for strength. They come for encouragement. They come for optimism. Maybe their families are there. Maybe their families are not there. I don't know. But they come to Rabbi Akiva. So amazingly enough, the Rambam understands that after they get whatever encouragement they want from Rabbi Akiva, ultimately, again, what happens? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah shares his insights as well. And what are his insights? His insight essentially is, my fellow rabbinic colleagues, for years, you have disagreed with me about the obligation to remember the Exodus every single day. I think it is time now that we reach consensus that we have to remember the Exodus day in and day out. Because if we don't remember the Exodus, then we run the risk of losing hope. Because what does the Exodus do for us day in and day out? The Exodus reminds us that even when things look terrible, even when things look bleak, even when it doesn't appear that salvation is anywhere on the horizon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu props us up, God choreographs the circumstances around us, and don't lose the faith. Keep your optimism, keep your outlook. Remember that ultimately, just like our ancestors had given up hope of ever being redeemed, yet they were, redemption will come for us as well. So that explains Rav Nevin Zal. He doesn't say this explicitly, but if you take his idea of the Rambam and Rabbi Elazar's idea, it turns out then that this section very much belongs. Because although Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is specifically talking about the daily obligation to remember the Exodus, at the end of the day, what's really unfolding here is something much deeper. A group of generational leaders getting together for the Pesach Seder, trying to figure out, how do we shepherd our people through this next stage? What do we do to keep the Jewish people alive? What do we do to stoke the fire of optimism, of hope? Thank you. What can we do? What can we do to, in order to ensure that Netzach Yisrael lo yishakeh, that ultimately Klal Yisrael will not die out? So Rabbi Akiva has his view. Rabbi Akiva was the greatest proponent of Bar Kochva, right? Rabbi Akiva believed that Bar Kochva had the capacity to be the Mashiach. See, he, Rabbi Akiva, put his support. Now, not everybody agreed with Rabbi Akiva. But whether, even if they had different views as to ultimately how to prop up the people, everyone agreed that we have to do something. Because if we don't do something now, we run the risk that the people will just be simply lost in the abyss of despair. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, it's time that we all agree that you remember the Exodus day in and day out. Because if we don't do this now, then what keeps hope alive? What keeps hope alive for the Jew more than the Exodus? The Exodus is the greatest story we have. It's a story of people who are beaten and battered. It's a story of people who almost lose all semblance of self. It's a story of people who are robbed of their humanity, but yet find the courage to follow God, to follow Moshe. Remember, again, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the Navi says, Zachati lach chesed ne'urayich. God says to us, I remember the kindness of your youth. He's talking to us, the kindness we did for him. What's the kindness we did for God? Lechtech acharai bamidbar. You followed me into the desert. What a crazy idea. What a ridiculous idea. Can you imagine this? Imagine for a moment you're a parent and you have your children. I know when we travel to New Jersey, how much food we pack up in the car, right? Just to take a 3-hour trip, chas v'shalom, should we get delayed. You're talking about millions of people going out into the desert with a little bit of matzah. With a little bit of matzah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I remember that chesed. I remember that kindness you did for me. Ultimately, again, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, we have to keep the hope alive. And the best way to do that is to remind the people day in and day out, morning and evening, the Exodus, the Exodus, the Exodus. We were beaten down and we were redeemed. We're beaten down now and we will be redeemed again. And that's why, amazingly enough, you know, the story of the Exodus, this is why everything we do in Judaism, right, always has that same refrain. What's the same refrain? Zecher Liyetzias Mitzrayim. Why? Even Shabbos, right? Shabbos is Zecher Liyetzias Mitzrayim. No, it's not. Right? Shabbos is not Zecher Liyetzias Mitzrayim. What does Shabbos have to do with the Exodus? We observe Shabbos because God rested on the seventh day. But ultimately, again, it's by leaving Egypt and by rehabilitating ourselves that we demonstrated the courage to become something greater than just the slave nation. That's why, amazing enough, the Gemara says, we will continue to say that phrase, that refrain, Zecher Liyetzias Mitzrayim, until when? Interestingly enough, until Mashiach comes. The Gemara says once Mashiach comes, Messianic redemption will eclipse Egyptian salvation. How that'll work, how that changes, Mirtzah Mashiach will tell us. So that's the first approach over here. Rav Nevenzal then goes on into a little bit more of a detailed or more mechanistic approach, but for now, I want to leave you with this idea. So therefore, according to the Rambam, the story of Rav Elazar ben Azariah is not a self-standing story, but instead, again, it's a continuation of the story of the rabbis in Bnei Brak, who are together to give each other strength, to give each other chizuk, to figure out how to shepherd the Jewish nation through what they know is going to be one of the darkest times throughout our history. If you turn the page, I'll share with you another incredible insight by Rabbi Lau. Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, he says something incredibly beautiful. Look at 3 Aleph. He quotes over here, Echad migedolei parshani haTorah. This is an incredibly novel idea. Rabbi Lau, you should just know, I don't know if you could buy this Haggadah. I got it in Eretz Yisrael. I've never seen it for sale here, but it is probably, it is by far like one of the most profound commentaries on the Haggadah that I've ever seen in my life. Rabbi Lau is probably one of the greatest thinkers and personalities of our generation. And he says something amazing over here. He says, Echad migidoli parashani haTorah b'doros haAchronim. So he quotes one of the contemporary commentaries. You know, for Jews, when we say contemporary, right? So contemporary includes what? Anything like in the last 300 years, right? If you're 300 years, you're modern day. See, he quotes over here, who is he going to? The Malbim. Nifchar lekunas harabanos harishona shelo begilt se'ir biyoser, v'hayu she'ir aroakach. So the Malbim, Rav Meir Leibush Weiser, who lives from 1809 to 1879. The Malbim is probably most well known for his commentary on Tanakh. Malbim wrote an expansive commentary on Tanakh. And there are some books on Tanakh, that, like Megillas Esther. So you can't appreciate Megillas Esther without the Malbim. Right? The Malbim gives you all the entire, an incredibly expansive commentary. The Malbim, interestingly enough, held many rabbinic communal positions. Now part of it is often because he was an outspoken critic of things that he did not like. So he made a lot of enemies, including Balabatim, who tried to have him jailed. Actually, who did have him jailed. Hey, so he moved around a lot because he liked to speak his mind. So the Malbim, again, he occupied a number of prominent rabbinic positions. He dies ultimately again in Kiev in 1879. So he quotes it from the Malbim. So the Malbim, the Rabbi Lau gives the context. The Malbim, I don't know which rabbinic position he's referring to over here, but the Malbim apparently was appointed to a prominent rabbinical post at a very young age. And there were many people who did not feel that it was appropriate for a man so young to hold such a prestigious position. So apparently in his first shir, his first communal lecture, so the Malbim says as follows. He gives a shir. Tzitit b'fnei ma'malbim es haketa shelefaneinu. Hamofia b'mishlo m'seches brachas v'iksha. Madua hishtamish Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah b'signon hanadir v'ayotzei dofen lo zachisi. So first of all, the Malbim begins by saying something very interesting. He says, why does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah use this wording? Harayinik ben Shem Shalom, like 70 years, v'lo zachisi. Lo zachisi means I have not merited. So the way we understand what's happening, or what does it mean he hasn't merited, what is he saying? What is he saying? He hasn't been successful. Right? He's been trying to advance a particular halachic opinion, and he's been unsuccessful in garnering support for that opinion. But the Malbim says, that's not the way you say that. Meaning, again, in halacha, in Jewish law, there are debates all of the time. So you never say, I have not been privileged, I haven't been zocha to be successful. You say, right now I'm the minority, right? I was outvoted. Why does he use that wording of lo zachisi? See, he goes on. He says, that's question number one. Vod, v'chi Rav Elazar ben Azariah she'arosh ha'yeshiva migdoli chachmei Yisrael, lo yoda lidrosh es darshaso shel ben zoma, umau ha'kesher lo uvda shu poseach ba harei ani keben shevim shana. So he asks three questions. Question number one is why the wording lo zachisi? I was never privileged to have my opinion upheld. Number one. Number two, you look at Ben Zoma's drasha, right? What does Ben Zoma do? Ben Zoma takes the verse, Leman tiskar es yom tzeischa me'eretz Yisrael kol yimei chayecha. You should remember the days of the Exodus, all the days of your life. Now that is a redundant phrase. Just say yimei chayecha, kol yimei chayecha. So Ben Zoma says yimei chayecha means the days of your life. Kol means what? The nights. Said the Malbim, I don't understand. It's not like the most complicated drasha. It's not the most complicated exposition. Why couldn't Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah figure that out himself? In other words, it's almost like I've been waiting my whole life for someone to give me a good scriptural proof for my position. Ben Zoma came along and gave it to me. Says the Malbim, I don't say Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you are the Rosh Yeshiva, right? You're the head of the Jewish people, as we'll talk about in just a little bit. Why couldn't you figure that out on your own? So he says something amazing. Ulam atshuva ne'utza b'mila kiben. Misupra b'gimara, shikasha, minu es Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So we're going to discuss this story in just a little bit. But Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, I am like 70 years old. Why am I like 70 years old? Because we know the story. He wasn't 70 years old. He was 18 years old. We're going to discuss that story in depth in just a moment. So understand Rabbi Elazar, the Malbim. Malbim says something absolutely amazing. What does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah saying? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah saying, listen, I made the drasha. It's my drasha. Lamant hiskaras yom tzeischami eretz Mitzrayim kol yimei chayecha. And I've been screaming this drasha. I've been talking about this exposition for years and years and years. V'lo zachisi, but no one ever paid attention to me. Until when? Ad shedarsha ben Zoma. Until they heard the teaching of Ben Zoma. Which teaching of Ben Zoma are we referring to? Look what the Malbim says. And in paragraph Dalit, 3 lines in, what did Ben Zoma say in Perkei Avos? Ezu chacham halomed mikol adam. Ben Zoma says in Perkei Avos, who is wise? He who is willing to learn from every person. Shene'emar mikom alam deyeskalti. Ukishe Ben Zoma doresh es hadrash hazu. Va'aleha lo hayecholek. As ne osua chachamim lishmoa es divar sheli hatsar liyamim. So this is amazing. This is the Malbim's incredible novel interpretation. He says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says like this: all of my years, I have been trying to advance this halachic position, and no one paid attention to me. You know why no one paid attention to me? No. Do you know why no one paid attention to me? Because I was young. Because I was too young. What wisdom can I possibly possess when standing in front of people many years my senior? So as much as I put forward the proof, as much as I explained the pasuk, I darshan the pasuk, I explained the pasuk, I brought supporting proofs, they were dismissive of my opinion. No one took me seriously. Ad shedarsha ben Zoma. Until Ben Zoma came along. And what did Ben Zoma say? Ben Zoma taught us, Ezu chacham halomed mikol adam. Now let's talk about that phrase for just a moment. Who is wise? He who learns from every person. Now, by the way, Ben Zoma doesn't need to teach me to learn from people who are smarter than me, or to teach me to learn from people who are older than me. Because I assume that anyone who's older than me, just on a most basic level, has what? More life experience, right? And life experience endows you with a dimension of wisdom that you can't get from sparma other things. So we all know to learn from people who are wiser than us, or ultimately, again, older than us. Ben Zoma says, every person has something to teach you. Every person could be your teacher, could be your Rebbe, could be a Mora, a Moret in some way. Every person has something they could teach you which could contribute to your personal growth. Ultimately, again, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, no one ever took me seriously because I was just the kid. Until Ben Zoma came along and said, Ezehu chacham halomed mikol adam. Who is wise? One who learns from every person. And every person doesn't just mean people more successful than me, older than me, wiser than me. It means that there's wisdom in youth as well. Now, amazingly enough, remember who's saying this? So the Malbim, and where is he saying it? Right? And his first Shabbos in his new shtel, right? His first Shabbos in his new job. So obviously, again, he's trying to make a point over here, but it's dramatically amazing. He says, Kach Amra Malbim, look at paragraph, hey, Im Kabbalas, Kakahuna Harishon Shalom. This is what the Malbim said in his first shtel, right? His first community. Kishu Romes, Kimuvan Shiesh Lahabit, El HaChochma, Velo El HaGil. Sometimes it is important to look at wisdom and not at age. There are older people who are very foolish, and there are younger people who are exceptionally wise. Ben Zoma says, keep your eyes open and keep your mind open, because every person has something to teach you. An incredibly profound lesson. What's its role? Why is it here in the Haggadah? So remember again, so much of the beauty of the Seder, of the essence of the Seder, is v'higarta levincha bayom hahu lemor. The Seder is the most important teachable moment we have throughout the year. The job of the Seder, the job, you know, people have different objectives for a Pesach Seder, I should say, different metrics of success. For some people, it's what time you end, right? For other people, it's remaining awake until the end. The real metric of success is, do I keep the kids engaged? That's the real metric of success. And by the way, whatever you have to do that. You know, the Haggadah is a suggestion book. You don't have to read every single paragraph of the Haggadah if you're going to lose the entire mishpacha along the way of the journey. The Haggadah is here to give you a framework in which you operate. Now don't get too excited about that, right? Don't start tearing out pages. But again, what I would urge you, again, obviously, there are certain parts of the Haggadah that you have to do, right? Because they're rooted in the mitzvos, the matzah, the mar, the four cups. But even, for example, this paragraph of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the rabbis in Bnei Brak, if you totally omitted these paragraphs and didn't read them, have you fulfilled the mitzvos of the night? Of course. Of course, these are facilitators for conversation. These are here in order to drum up people's interest. They're not there to keep people hostage at the table. You know, I will tell you that sometimes it turns out that the Seder has such a dramatically negative effect because people feel held hostage. Like, when is this going to be over? Right? How much longer is this going to go for? And that's why, again, if you lead a Seder, you're going to be, you have to prepare. Because you have to know your guests, you have to know your family, you have to know, okay, how long could we go before people get starving to the point that they're not going to tune out everything else? Right? What do we need to do? You plan ahead. You plan ahead. So ultimately, again, the goal of the Seder night is, I want my children to love their Judaism. I want my children to love God. I want my children to understand that now that we have experienced freedom, go out and do something great. So the mitzvah of the night is inspire your children. The mitzvah of the night is pass down the Mesorah. Take the transmission of our beautiful religion and hand it over to the next generation and watch them get excited about it as well. But there's a second follow-up lesson, which is, that communication needs to go both ways, right? It's not a frontal lecture where a parent is telling all this stuff to children. Of course, as the parent, I have a lot more information than my child has, and I want to impart that information. But Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, there's another important part of the Seder, which is, listen to your kids. Listen to the children. Listen to what they have to say. Because something amazing happens when you listen to children. What's amazing happens when you listen to children? You know, as adults, just inevitably, as we go through the journey of life, we tend to become a little bit more cynical, sarcastic, less trusting, jaded, for a variety of reasons, some of them legitimate, some of them not so legitimate. The great part about children, although again, this age is going down and down as well, is there's a purity that's there. There's something beautiful and untarnished that is there. When you get a child to go ahead and engage in a Seder, when you get a child to engage in something in their Yiddishkeit, you know, a child's not doing it for covet, for honor. A child's not doing it, again, for ego. If a child's engaged, there's a purity that's there. There's a purity in that heart. There's a purity in that soul. And as a parent, I know whenever I see this come out in my own children, I'll tell you, there's always a part of me that's very jealous. Because I think to myself, like, if only I could get as excited about something so simple like my children did. Whether it's one of my kids saying over a Devar Torah or something, or you know, let's be honest, when they come to the Seder, and you know, they come with that Haggadah that they made in school that has like seven rings, a shoulder strap, and you're thinking to yourself, oh God, right? I want to be a good and supportive parent, and of course, I can't wait to hear everything, but I don't want to hear everything. Right? So, you know, I try to say, save something for tomorrow, right? Save something for Chol HaMoed, right? I'm sorry. And for lunch, correct, like we space it out. But you know that look on that little child's face when they schlep that humongous Haggadah to the table and it's been wrapped in tinfoil or whatever it is, and this is a drawing, and it's this. There's something beautiful in that. And as adults, we often lose that. We find, hopefully we find incredible inspiration, and hopefully we find incredible beauty, but a lot of the simplicity in Yiddishkeit, a lot of the simplicity in Judaism, is often lost on adults. We lose a lot of our simplicity as we go through the journey of life. But when you see it in children, it's magical and magnificent. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah comes along in the Haggadah and says, okay, parents, you have an obligation. Parents, grandparents, you are the custodians of the Masorah. You are the custodians of our heritage. And Pesach is one of the most important nights of the year where I transmit that to my children, to my grandchildren, to my guests. Just make sure you don't spend the whole night just talking. Make sure you also spend some time listening. Because even if there are people who are not as learned as you, even if there are people who are not as wise as you, even if there are people who are not as old as you, you'd be surprised where you find wisdom in every corner of the world. That says Rabbi Lab, that says the Malbim, is the Master of Elazar ben Azariah. Yes?
Gideon, we went to the dollar store the other day, he gets prizes, and he asks questions to us, and if we answer the question, we get the prize.
He buys the prizes and you get, well, you buy the prizes probably.
No, he pays me back.
Got it.
And he, from what he learned in school, he did this last year also. He asks us questions.
It's beautiful.
And if we're right, we get the prize.
What happens if you're wrong? You don't get the prize. Okay, good. Beautiful. This, and there's something so beautiful. Again, and there's this incredible balance. On one hand, again, I have an obligation as the adult to convey information, but I also don't want to miss out on the opportunity to hear what is being said sometimes from those pure souls that have not yet been tainted or jaded or in any way tarnished by the realities of life. I'll share with you another approach as well. If you take a look at number four, so this approach, and this where I think is where the Haggadah is also a fascinating book. The Haggadah also, there are certain things that the Haggadah spells out, and I think certain things that the Haggadah wants us to explore and to find on our own. So perhaps what the Haggadah wants us to get from Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is not simply his statement over here. Because remember, again, as we mentioned before, the problem with the statement is that at the end of the day, it doesn't really relate to the Seder night. It relates to general nightly obligation to remember the Exodus. So perhaps what the Haggadah is really driving us towards is the story. Because remember again, most of the Haggadah is done without attribution. Right? The Haggadah is a collection of verses. The Haggadah is a collection ultimately of statements. Most of them without attribution. So your antenna always has to go up when something comes up in the Haggadah and there's attribution. Like, we're being told, again, just like in the story in Bnei Brak, we're told about every name of the rabbi. By the way, those names are very important because each of those names, each of those rabbis who participated in the Seder of Bnei Brak, each of them has a backstory. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, so the Haggadah wants us to say, okay, there's something to be learned, not just from the statement, but from the man. Let's take a look at the story here. So 4, 5, and 6 are the stories, is the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So listen to this. So a little bit of background. Remember again, at this point in time, obviously there's no more monarchy. This is, remember again, towards the end of the Second Temple era. So there is a Nasi and an Av Beis Din. There is essentially like a political leader, a religious leader. The Av Beis Din of the Rosh Hashanah, the Rosh Yeshiva, was the religious leader. At this point in time, the story picks up, Rabbi Gamliel is the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Gamliel is the religious leader of the Jewish people. So the Gemara tells a story that there was a whole falling out between Rabbi Gamliel and another sage, Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Gamliel publicly embarrassed Rabbi Yoshua, and as a result, the rabbis get together and they decide, you know what? Rabbi Gamliel cannot really serve as our leader anymore. He publicly shamed another rabbi, and so they decide that, you know what, essentially they fire him. They fire him, so who should they hire in his stead? So number five. So it's actually amazing because the Gemara goes through like the whole search process, and there are a number of great people in the running over here. Rabbi Akiva was in the running. Finally they come to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So look at number five. So the Gemara says, Elanuk min Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Let's appoint Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to replace Rabbi Gamliel. Why? What qualifications does he have? Now remember again, understand, he's very, very young. What qualifications does he have? Du chacham, he's very wise. Vu ashir, he's very wealthy. Vu asiri le'ezra, and he is a 10th generation to the prophet Ezra. Why are each of these qualifications important? Hu chacham, dimakshili mafikli, he's wise. So if somebody asks him a question, he could answer. It's a good qualification for Rosh Yeshiva, right? He's got to be knowledgeable. Next, he's rich. Vu ashir, di islei lefaluchi lebe kesar afu azalu palach. You see, remember again, the religious leader of the Jewish people has to be respected by the Romans as well. The Romans are not going to respect him for his Torah knowledge, but they will respect him for what? His wealth. So therefore, again, he has to... By the way, I want to point this out. This is actually quite amazing. This is not just the Romans. We Jews have the same thing also, which is why we know that the halacha is the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, has to be wealthy. One of the qualifications for the job is he has to be wealthy. The Gemara actually discusses, well, what happens if he's the best, this Kohen Gadol is the best man for the job, but he's not wealthy. So the Gemara gives a very simple answer, which is, we make him wealthy. Right, we go ahead and we enrich him, we make him independently wealthy. What's the logic behind that? The Kohen Gadol has to be respected. People respect different things. Some people respect Torah scholarship, some people respect personal piety, some people respect good midos, character traits, other people respect financial accomplishment, money. The Kohen Gadol has to have Ala Milus, yes?
I was just thinking, if he's wealthy, then the assumption is he's not going to be turned by money.
Absolutely as well. Correct. This, we see this, by the way, this is true for the head of the Sanhedrin as well. People in positions of prominence, we never want money in any way coming into their decision. Absolutely. So therefore, again, he's wealthy. Next, he's Asir Ezra, he's the 10th generation of Ezra. Therefore, the Islay is Chus Avos. He has a good pedigree, has a good family tree, what we call Chus Avos, right? He has ultimately the merits of his forefathers. Fine. So they come to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, would you like to become the Rosh Yeshiva? Amr lehu, what does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah say? Thank you, Ezel ve'imlech ve'in shibesi. I have to speak to my family. Of course, speak to my family means what? His wife. I have to speak with my wife. I can't make this decision on my own. Now, again, because understand, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah also understood, is that assuming such a prominent position of communal leadership is obviously going to come at the expense of many, many other things. Therefore, again, I cannot accept this position by myself. I have to ask my wife. Azo ve'imlech bedvisu. Listen to this exchange. So he says to his wife, what should I do? His wife says, a very wise woman, Amrelei dilma ma'avrin lecha. So, you know, in Jewish communal service, right? So if you want to go ahead, before you take a job, the first thing you always have to look at is what happened to your predecessor. Because again, that says a lot about the community you're in, says a lot about the constituency you're going to be with. How did they treat the last Rosh Yeshiva? So his wife says, listen. Rabbi Gamliel was older than you. Rabbi Gamliel, you'll excuse me, my dear husband, was smarter than you. Rabbi Gamliel was more well-respected than you. And look what happened. They deposed him. They fired him. So what do you think is going to happen to you? We're young. What's going to happen the first time the drasha goes too long? Right? What's going to happen the first time you deliver a halachic ruling that they don't like? What's going to happen when you weigh on an issue and it's against the otherwise held conventional wisdom? What's going to happen to you? They're going to remove you from your position as well. So this is amazing. Amrullah, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah responds to his wife, you're right. But, lishtamish inish yomachada bakasa demarka ulamachar limitbar. It is better to use a beautiful, expensive crystal glass for one day, even if tomorrow it breaks. Better to use the crystal goblet for one day, even if tomorrow it breaks. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, in his incredible wisdom, says to his wife, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I understand people. I got it. Today they're my friends, right? Today they want me. Tomorrow they might not. And I understand. And I understand that my standing, my relationships, everything could change on a dime. I accept that. I understand that. But there's an opportunity in front of me here. And opportunities do not come with guarantees for success. Opportunities in life do not come with money-back guarantees. Opportunities in life do not come with absolute assurances that you're going to be successful and it's going to turn out exactly as you want it to. Opportunities come often with great risks. And the greater the opportunity, the greater the risk. But says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to his wife, this is the opportunity which has presented itself now. And if I'm not going to take it because of what may happen in the future, then I might as well resign myself to a life that lacks any form of dynamic activity. Because in life there are no guarantees for the future. And in life there are no guarantees for success. And all you could do is try your best at any particular endeavor, put in your hishtadlus, put in your effort, and ask for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's assistance. Sometimes you'll be successful, sometimes you'll fail. Sometimes you fail mildly, and sometimes you fail miserably. What's amazing here is that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah does not argue on the substance of what his wife is saying. You're right. You're absolutely right. But again, what kind of life are we going to have if that's the approach we take even from now, from a young age? So she goes on. Amrale, she says to him, well, Leslie Chiyurta, you have no gray hair. Now, by the way, so it's clear that she does not want him to take this job. Right? You have no gray hair. So what happens? Hahu Yoma Bartamni Sare Shanihava. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was 18 years old. So first of all, you just have to understand something. The incredible greatness of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, if he's being approached at the age of 18 to be the religious leader of the Jewish community, speaks volumes about who he was and what he was. So that day he was 18 years old. Israchish le Misa v'hajle tamni sari darich yurta. A miracle occurred, and 18 rows of gray hair suddenly appeared on his head. Hainu to come Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. This is what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah means when he says, as we just read in the Haggadah, Hare ani keben shivim shana. I am like 70 years old. Like 70 years old, but what? Not really 70 years old. I'll just tell you as an aside, the Ben Yehoyada, one of the commentaries on the Gemara, Ben Yehoyada was Chacham Yosef Chaim, was the chief rabbi of Baghdad, the late 1800s. See, he writes that this was actually not a miracle. He said, about the gray hair, he says, that's what happens when you take on the yoke of responsibility for the Jewish people. So there's no miracle. It's Rachesh Nisa, is that he had hair, right? It's Rachesh Nisa didn't all fall out. The fact that he went gray on his what it means is, as soon as he took on that yoke, as soon as he took on that responsibility, it aged him. It aged him. But what's the point? What I want you to take away from this Gemara, to me, this exchange between Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and his wife is one of the most profound exchanges. His wife telling him, why do you want to take on something that has so much risk? Look at what happened to Rabbi Gamliel. Look at what happened just a day ago to your predecessor. Do you really want to do this? And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says so profoundly, I'd rather use the crystal goblet for one day, even if tomorrow it's gone, than to never use it at all.
It's interesting that he perceived the job as a crystal goblet. She clearly did not.
100%. And by the way, that's at the root of their disagreement. You know, civil disagreement. She did not see it as a crystal goblet. She saw this as heartache, difficulty. He saw it as a golden opportunity. And for him, the only variable was, how long will I be able to hold on to it? And now, we could begin to appreciate why this is in the Haggadah. Remember again, the entire essence of the Seder is not to simply go ahead and retell the historical narrative. We say this, interestingly enough, we mention this, but we actually mention it all the way at the end of Maggid. Right before the end of the Maggid section, we say, Chayav Adam Liros es Atzmo Kilu Hu Yatza Mitzrayim. The goal of the Pesach Seder is not to go ahead and remember something that occurred thousands of years ago. It's to re-experience emancipation. It's to re-experience freedom. It's to go ahead and go through the Pesach Seder and to feel when I started the yoke of servitude and bondage, and then slowly as I go through the Haggadah, I feel it lifted off me. Till by the time I get to the end of Maggid, ultimately, I feel free. Something has happened. I've experienced freedom. And then the million-dollar question becomes, So what is freedom? What do I do with this freedom? I'm free. As we said before, freedom clearly doesn't mean the ability to do whatever I want. That's absolutely clear. God takes us out and he puts us on the road to get the Torah 49 days later. So what is freedom? What do I do with freedom? So on a most basic level, Rabbi Elazar is telling us one thing I want to tell you what freedom is not. Freedom doesn't come with guarantees. Freedom means the ability to self-actualize. Freedom means the ability to seize your destiny. Freedom means the ability to make yourself the best version of yourself. But understand, that quest does not come with guarantees for success. You know, there are people in life who only will go ahead and take something on if they're 1,000% sure they can be successful. They'll only do something they can be successful at. That's a variety of reasons. Some people are just scared of failure. Some of us have failed so many times that we just don't want to fail anymore. The problem is if you take that approach to life, you end up missing out on so many dramatically beautiful opportunities. Freedom allows us to seize the opportunities of existence. But those opportunities come with no guarantees for success. That's the message of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Hare ani k'ben shivim shana. I'm like 70 years old. I'm not 70. I'm only 18. And look what happens. V'lo zachisi shete amar yitzias mitzrayim. And yet on one hand, remember he's saying, I've been advancing this argument for years and years and years. No one's listened to me. I'm the Nasi. I'm in charge. No one's listening to me. Ben Zoma came along and they started listening to me. His wife says, don't take the job. It's not a good idea. It's not going to work out well. And what does he say? I'm 18 years old. Life is in front of me. If I adopt that mindset now, that I'm only going to do things if I'm guaranteed of success, then I might as well throw in the towel right now. Because anything in life that is worth anything, anything in life that has the potential for meaningful accomplishment and self-actualization, comes with heightened possibility and maybe even probability of failure. But freedom means the ability to engage in the dynamic activity even though I run the risk of failure, and not being afraid to fail. That's freedom. So perhaps ultimately, in addition to all of the other messages that we saw from Rabbi Lau, that we saw from Rav Nevenzal about the message over here, there's a message for Pesach in just the personality of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah himself. Freedom doesn't come with guarantees. Success doesn't come with guarantees. Don't be afraid to embark on life initiatives. Don't be afraid to try something. Don't be afraid to do something. Don't be afraid to take on the challenge because you're afraid to fail. Because it is better to use the crystal goblet for one day, even if tomorrow it breaks. Yes?
I'm trying to think of a sort of time frame.
And that's what I'm doing here.
I'm trying to think of a time frame.
No,
frame. Because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, he wasn't accepted, he wasn't privileged until
Ben Zoma,
and yet this is at age 18, and yet here he is at 18 being asked to leave.
Right. So the simple answer would be that this was prior to 18. That's the simple answer. You know, I don't know the timeline for these statements. I mean, how, you know, from what age was he espousing halachic ideas? I don't know. So I would assume once he's accepted as Rosh Yeshiva, although Rabbi Lau writes in here also that he was Rosh Yeshiva already when he said this, but I don't think that's the simple idea. I think he must have said this. He obviously was a very special young man. But it appears that probably that tension of being marginalized must have been before he was asked to assume this position of power. Because once he assumes this position of power, first of all, he no longer looks young. Right? The Malbim's whole idea of him being marginalized seems to be not just in a chronological issue, but he looked like a kid. Right. He was a kid, and he looked like a kid. Therefore, marginalized. I would think once he was accepted as a Rosh Yeshiva, right, that was it. Yes?
I was impressed by the fact that he decided to defer his decision until he consulted with his wife. That's very unusual for this time period.
Right.
And that kind of a conversation. And that the conversation is recorded.
Right.
And her point, and she's playing it safe, and he says he's going to go for the risk.
Right.
We'll take a chance.
100%.
And it's so two different personalities. Neither one is wrong, really. But if you don't take a chance, you don't succeed.
Correct. And to build on that, there's no question that there are times in life where Mrs. Elazar ben Azariah's worldview is more prudent, right? Meaning you don't take every risk. You don't. You don't roll the dice every single time. There are things in life where it's worth putting yourself out for, and then there are things in life where, no, this is not the right thing for me now. So it's a very important point. She's not wrong. She's not wrong. He just felt, and I think it was mentioned before, they had a different conception as to the opportunity that was being placed before them right now. He saw it as the crystal goblet. She saw it as a colossal headache, right? And so she's trying to save. She's, what is she doing? She's trying to save, not just playing it safe, she's trying to save her husband. Remember, again, everyone saw what just happened to Rabbi Gamliel. This was a major event. I mean, we didn't do that part of the story justice, but it was a major, major event. Rabbi Gamliel was deposed. Major event. For a sage of that stature to effectively be fired is major. So she is literally looking out for her husband, saying, why? I don't want you to be exposed that way. So it's actually an incredibly like beautiful, loving conversation of a wife looking out for a husband, trying to spare him from heartache and heartbreak, but a husband saying, I really think this is my calling.
I also want to add that given our recent past history, some of the people who survived the Shoah were people who took that risk, they took the gamble, and the people who played it safe did not.
Yeah.
So they're both
answers. Absolutely.
Is this the same Rabbi Gamliel that we have in the Ella Eskra?
That we have?
In the Ella Eskra.
Ella Eskra. Yes. Yes, this is the same Rabbi Gamliel. There are two Rabbi Gamliels. Yeah. This is Rabbi Gamliel. This is Rabbi Gamliel 2.
This is 2.
Correct. This is the grandson of the first Rabbi Gamliel. Yes.
I'm trying to put things in time frame, and I'm also reading some of the quotes from Rabbi Eliezer. But
to kind of just wrap this all together, so you begin to see something incredibly amazing. You begin to see how from a little section in the Haggadah of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we begin to go ahead, and again, we begin to see incredibly dramatic and overwhelming ideas. We see a historical concept that the rabbis are together in Bnei Brak in order to give each other chizuk, in order to give each other comfort, but more importantly, in order to gird one another with strength and optimism for the future. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah riding the wave of this, ultimately saying we have to remember the Exodus every day, because the Exodus will give us the hope, the optimism, and the strength to continue to go forward. Remember it in the morning, remember it in the evening, just like our ancestors thought that all was lost, but yet they were saved. It may look like all is lost for us, but we too will experience salvation again. We saw again Rabbi Lau, who explained that from this little section, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is teaching us that on this sacred night, when it is our job, the older generation, to convey our Mesorah, our beautiful heritage, to our children, our grandchildren, our families, and our friends, make sure to not only talk, but also make sure to listen as well. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, no one ever listened to me, ad shedarsha ben Zoma, until Ben Zoma came along and said, bless you, Ezu chacham halobim mikol adam, on the night of the Seder teach, on the night of the Seder convey, but on the night of the Seder also listen. And lastly, just from Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah himself, we learn an incredible and important lesson about freedom. Freedom represents the opportunity to take advantage of our opportunities. Freedom represents the platform through which we can seize a variety of life opportunities. But sometimes we only like to seize the opportunities that come with assured success. If that's the unfortunate approach we take to life, we end up losing out on an incredible amount of opportunity. Because opportunities in life, and especially the good ones, never come with any degree of assured success. The greater the opportunity, the more heightened the probability and possibility for failure. But we must always remember the words of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Sometimes it is better to benefit from the beautiful crystal goblet of life opportunity for today, even if tomorrow it will break. All right, let's stop.